The Cultural Council's mission is to nurture, promote, and support a healthy, diverse, and inclusive cultural sector so that the arts and culture are a part of everyday life for everyone. We invite listeners to discover Florida's cultural capital online at palmbeachesculture.com. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Artie Gras podcast, where we dive into all things art and culture of Palm Beach County. I'm your host, Sarah LaPierre, and I'm really happy to be in the studio today with my friend and fellow artist, Kyle Lux. He's a phenomenal painter, and we have a lot to dive into because he's a busy guy right now. Yeah, Kyle, welcome. Yeah,
thank you, Sarah. This is an honor to be here, and I'm so happy to talk about my story and maybe give some insights that people haven't heard yet.
We have a lot to jump into, but I want to start with the background. Mm-hmm. Can you take us back to when you first realized that art was going to be a lifelong passion for you?
Yeah, I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, and my mom has a fine art degree. And so like kids in school at that time, we got 1 hour a week, I think, in art class. And I loved it. We were doing sculpture. We're doing all these things. But I got to go home and continue doing it. I was using her college art supplies and these professional materials. And even just the finger painting, like we were talking about golden paint as before this, it's like, I'm using good stuff. And so I just, that progressed and around the clock, I loved it. I love sharing that time with my mom. And when I really got the bug thinking this was going to be a lifelong thing, I did a drawing at age 10 that I submitted to Sports Illustrated. And while I was waiting, I was showing people this drawing that I was really proud of. And I showed my fourth grade teacher. And Mrs. Brown,
shout out,
we're going to have to, I got to connect with her now if we have Facebook and everything, I got to figure that out. She commissioned a drawing. It's my very first commission. I was 10 years old of Michael Jordan. So in 1996, the Bulls were on top of the world. They three-peated and it's just like, yeah, this is one of the most famous people, in being an athlete myself and competitive little, you know, playing all the sports. It's just a huge gesture on her part. And I'll make sure she hears this. Yeah, I'll find her. But there's that little thing went a long way, even if she didn't like the result.
I'm sure she did.
I still have a scan of it somewhere. At that point, we had to scan my work and put it in the portfolio to save it. It's under my bed somewhere. But that's something that I just, from that point on, I didn't necessarily know I would be a professional, but I was like, I love this. This feels really good to be acknowledged in this way for a talent and something that I've spent a lot of time on. And it just, I want that feeling more and more and more.
Yeah. What an awesome start. Yeah. And I relate to that a lot. My dad was a professional artist as well. So similarly, growing up, his studio was in our home and he always made a joke where if you want your kids to pick up something, get the best version of it and just leave it out in an empty room and maybe even tell them not to touch it. But yeah, we had, you know, great art supplies, a room full of things. He would even let me paint on some of his canvases, like background stuff, you know, but I was constantly underfoot in the studio. That's a great start though. I love it. And there's nothing like that first, especially when you're younger, that first moment of like, oh my gosh, I sold a painting. Like, or, you know, I made something that somebody valued and we got to have this exchange, not just monetarily, but like, you know, energetically, somebody's excited about something.
Yeah.
You created.
It's, at the deepest sense of it, it's an emotional connection to something. And it'd be like hitting the home run to win the game. Like if you do that when you're 8 or 10 years old, you're going to really like baseball and that feeling and your teammates. And like, that's, so I think getting a commission at that age was kind of like winning a version of winning, even though it was on competition. It's like same kind of feeling.
Definitely. Yeah. So now you mentioned your mom, you know, her background is in the arts. What do you think one lesson that was a big takeaway that maybe, you know, has still influenced the style or the way that you work?
Kind of back to getting the education outside of class, they weren't teaching this to 6-year-olds, but the light source. And I've never forget this. She would draw something she learned in her education was drawing the light bulb in the corner of the paper as a reminder of where your light's coming from. So every single object, if you're doing a still life, if you're doing a face, like revert back to that. Mm. And that's your guiding light. No pun intended. It's like, it needs to look consistent. Yeah. And as a portrait artist, lighting makes all the difference. You can kind of tell a bad Photoshop job in an advertisement somewhere. If the lighting's off, it's like, well, that person something looks off.
Yeah.
They may not know why. But someone who knows lighting can understand, well, yeah, it's because the shadows are in the wrong spot.
I think we're seeing that even more with AI now, yeah, too, right? You're like, something is not right here.
And yeah, I know it'll get better, but yeah, the earliest versions of AI probably were still figuring out, you know, obviously the hands and the fingers, that's one of the running jokes, but lighting. And so, yeah, she's like, it really does make something look realistic and have depth. And it's all lighting, right? So the only reason we see angles and something looks three-dimensional is because the light's hitting it from different directions. And so that was a huge thing to learn.
Yeah, as a 6-year-old.
And 6 to 8, somewhere in that range, like years before my contemporaries. And it wasn't, again, a competition, but if I'm learning lighting at an early age outside of class, I was just progressing faster.
Absolutely.
So at age 10, I was getting a commission as opposed to maybe a 13 or 14-year-old. So that domino effect of learning all that stuff outside
And that's class. Such a major concept that once you have that, the building blocks just continue to stack up from there and you get stronger and stronger in your work, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
I love that you started at such an early age. I'm learning things. This is great. So I want to jump into career highlights. You've been featured in stadiums. Your work is in corporate spaces, even in homes of major collectors and many famous people. So what's been one of the most surreal moments that you've had when somebody's collected your work?
So this is what I was teasing as we were doing the canvas. Just the other day, I walked into a business office and I saw Peter Max. I'd met Peter in high school and it was just neat to be in the same environment and have my work in front of the same person who was collecting Peter Max. That person was Jack Nicklaus.
Oh my God.
Right?
That's amazing.
Jack's 85. His birthday was last month. Happy belated, Jack. But growing up as a athlete and in a golf household, so my dad was a competitive amateur golfer, idolized Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer and Gary Player and the greats. And so for me to have this career as an artist and specifically sports, to find myself in a room with Jack. So he so generously agreed to autograph a painting I did of him that I'm donating to a live auction for Chasing a Dream Foundation.
Oh, incredible.
And it's March 13th. So we had to get a little bit of a head start.
Yeah.
And I was able to meet at the office the other day. And, you know, the path I've chosen as a sports artist, a lot of it is the perk of the job. It's getting me in rooms and experiences that I can't buy. Mm. And that makes me feel good that I can use my artistic talent to do that. Instead of my athletic ability, right? So to be able to meet Jack through my painting and to spend a couple minutes, like it felt longer than it probably really was, but talking about, you know, he took an interest in why sports and who I was. And it wasn't just a sign next, thanks for coming by, let me know how it goes type deal. Yeah. He was so welcoming.
Your art's doing what it's made to do, which is striking these conversations, not, you know, just with the collector, but with anybody who's the viewer.
Right.
Yeah. That's incredible. Yeah. Congratulations. So, I love that.
Yeah. So that's the next round of, I don't like using this word all the time, but content like that. Sure. So no one's really seen that yet. This is the first time I've talked about it.
Oh my God. An exclusive.
You heard it here first, kids. So that's coming out and, something I can share back with my family, especially my dad, because my mom usually gets a lot of the accolades with, you know, talking
being
about
the story.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. But the sports really came from my dad. So be able to share that with him and give my dad a shout out in that meeting was really cool.
That's so special. Something to really, you know, treasure. And then also the fact that you're, you know, coming into the spaces with artists that you've grown up with and kind of previously admired and maybe idolized as well. Like now you're sharing spaces with those artists as well.
I walked in and I'm starting to nerd out on the artwork on the walls and he's got so many accomplishments and accolades and trophies and an original Peter Max that Peter gave him on his 60th birthday.
Wow.
It's like
incredible.
This is really an amazing experience for me because I idolized Peter Max and Jack Nicklaus. And so all of these ideas to come together. And yeah, it's surreal. It was really cool. And it was just
I feel like you probably have a lot of these moments, honestly. I mean, you've painted some of the most iconic athletes and cultural figures, musicians, you know, I mean, we've got Jackie O behind you. This is a gorgeous piece come up recently. I know you've done a series of her with the sunglasses reflecting different icons of Palm Beach. Is that right?
The idea of the series is her traveling the world through her sunglasses. So the sunglasses are the portal to the story, kind of symbolizing maybe a chapter in her life. Right. So I just happened to start her in Palm Beach. That's where the idea came about. And I learned about the colony and the breakers and places she would have gone, especially back in the 60s when they had the Winter White House in Palm Beach. But she will travel the world. The only stipulation is I can't put her in a place that I can't more or less prove that she was
there.
So as much as I would love to put her in St. Louis, my hometown, unless I can see some evidence that she was there, I have to stick to my idea. Stick to my guns. But coming up will be Jackie in Greece. That chapter of her life with Onassis, who is notable for having this massive yacht and just being this super powerful figure in Greece. And then Paris. So Jackie was a phenomenal woman, multifaceted, charming, but a lot of people don't know she spoke multiple languages. She spoke French fluently. And so when she would accompany JFK around the world, was able to, I think, give them a little more respect being in a place, you know, Americans and the French don't have the warmest relationship all the time, but helping. So that kind of her story is what I like telling through the glasses. And, so yeah, what's behind us is Jackie at the colony. I lost track. I just put her on my next business card round. So
nice.
Different one.
And now this is one of your canvas prints. You do editions of them, but the original, I mean, I've seen one of the originals of her pretty large.
They're huge. Yeah. They're 4 feet.
Yeah.
And some paintings, some subjects don't look that big at that size, but when a face is 3 feet tall, so the colony in that original is big enough to see the windows. I could have even put details in the windows if I wanted to. You can see the champagne bottle by the poolside. So that is what I like about large portraits is it's kind of like what we experience at the movies when something's larger than life. There's a magical quality to it. And
and you're taking these figures who are already, you know, have that about them and extending that to the viewer
their stories are larger than life. That's why they're at the iconic level. If I can tell it in any shape, great, but if the bigger the better.
So any wild reactions that you've ever gotten from your work, whether it's from, you know, just a viewer who happens to see it and engage with it, or from somebody that you're handing it off to, you know, a collector or
So back to the perk of the job. It happens with donations, especially. I can get an athlete to sign something. And an athlete in St. Louis agreed to let me come into his house, of all places, on his birthday. Catching him before going out and having dinner and this whole amazing night. And he was just so down to earth. He's like, yeah, come on over. I'll sign it. And gave me the time of day. We had probably 10 minutes there. And just kind of just casually talking, and he's like, hey, I got an idea. And this is one of the craziest things I've heard, like a serious proposal, because I take commissions. And he's like, I want a 8 foot, 9 foot painting over my mantle in my other house of me on a stallion with my shirt off and my gorgeous wife behind me. And we're holding our like toddler kids. I was thinking, my mind immediately goes to the end of Dodgeball with Ben Stiller. Maybe it's the beginning. It's somewhere in the movie.
Yeah.
But it's this hilarious mural or painting of Ben Stiller holding like the bull by the horns, but he's just ripped to shreds. And that's what this guy wanted. And he has, he's known for having a sense of humor, and he's, you know, lighthearted guy. I was like, that's amazing. I would love to do that for you. We didn't really have the next conversation about it. It'd be a difficult commission. Now with AI coming as far as it has, I would still paint what I would generate. Mm-hmm. So it's still an original painting, but instead of me having to go find a stallion and having to have, you know, a photo shoot or anything, or to mix and match from what's already online.
Because for people who don't know, you're always working from reference photos. Yeah. So getting that.
Right. And so, and that's been a major part of portraiture and history. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool to learn about the masters, the Renaissance masters. Like, if they didn't have a model, or if they saw something in another master's painting of somebody at a certain pose, they would do their version of photoshopping and take that person and move them over.
Fascinating.
Change the clothing. They were so good at anatomy, they could easily do that. Yeah. And sometimes it was a nod of respect of, like, you know, Michelangelo's like, all right, Da Vinci,
see what you
got
there.
30 years on me. I'll give you a nod. I'll put your Adam in my painting, but I'm going to change them and make them mine. So there is I use a ton of references in my paintings. And something like that of the stallion and this, you know, jacked athlete and his wife behind him, would take a lot of photoshopping and me to figure out how to put it all together. So it looks real, and to find a light source and go back to the basics of composition and making it look like it's not an illustration, that it's something that could have happened. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that's what his idea was, like, it needs to look real. Yeah. And so that was a serious suggestion. A lot of people, they'll joke about stuff like that. Mm. Paint me like one of your French girls, or, the one from Wedding Crashers with the guy, what the painting Vince Vaughn receives.
Yep.
And he's in a forest, and it's this really strange painting. It's like, people want their version, but with their face on it. And, but yeah, this one was real, and I need to reach out to him and see if he still wants it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. And I mean, honestly, even if you have to plan that photo shoot, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll find a way to make it work.
That's an opportunity that I think
I know horse people now.
Yes, that's right. You do. All right. So, you know, more about kind of some highlights and actually literally talking about the horse people. Recently, you collaborated with institutions like Historical Society of Palm Beach and then the USPA, the shop at the National Polo Center. Mm-hmm. So new ways of you kind of getting connected to the community here. And, you know, I would just love to hear about those collaborations and how, you know, they've impacted the way that you work and show in the community.
Well, exposure was something that took me a while to figure out that it's not a silver bullet, but that is such a major part of sharing your artwork with people. Whether you're selling it or not, you have to, if you want to eventually sell it.
I'll interject right there and say that that's like the number one thing when you ask artists what they request. You know, it's not necessarily like funding. It's just places to show their work and eyes.
Yeah. Because we have a lot of friends in common and collectors. And so there's a lot of consistency in that world. It's great. We have our supporters, but there may not be the people from Wellington coming in to see a show that we're in downtown West Palm. And so how do you get exposure to that community and that circle? And so this has been the USPA shop collaboration was great for that. And to show people that I paint equestrian, but still sports and still in my style. And the Historical Society, also a different circle. Maybe they do cultural events, but not necessarily the art shows that we're going to be doing. So reaching tens of thousands of people through those different networks, it is exponential. You know, beyond what I have on social media and my email database and all of that. And it's kind of the tip of the iceberg, which is really exciting.
Definitely.
That Historical Society really came about mid-November. That's when that launched. And then the USPA shop kicked off 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's more to come with them. And just more conversations. At the end of the day, it's really, really fun to meet people and see how they react to your work
right.
that have no idea. Kind of like first timers, like, what do you think? Like,
yeah,
they don't come and in with any preconceived notions.
You know, as an artist, you're getting opportunities to push your work in maybe a different direction. You know, where, I mean, you have these beautiful series with the Hermes scarves that you're working on now with the horse. I mean, they're incredible and different, you know, but like you said, still these energetic moments for sports related figures, just in a different light, a different way.
And it keeps it from getting stale. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you and your mixed media work and like getting away from maybe what some people might know and in your calling card.
Right. You have to go down these little rabbit trails sometimes. And as an artist, just have, you know, take maybe even some risks and explore different opportunities to, again, whether you're just pushing yourself creatively or you're finding a new market or you're, you know, just shaking things up for people who have been enjoying your work for many, many years. And they're, you know, open to taking that journey with you as an artist.
Yeah.
That's another just really special evolution that you get to go through as a creative, is being maybe recognized for something, trying the next direction and kind of seeing what people respond to and why it, you know, says something to them.
Yeah. I think it's natural for artists to want to evolve, and you get better with your specific ideas and your series. But the goal is the journey. Like, so to have it, like, it's not nearly as I could paint Jackie's the rest of my life and probably sell a handful and have nice conversations from that. But I would just be getting better at painting Jackie.
Right.
And so that doesn't inspire me in the, you know, overall. I'll switch it up. And
You want to keep progressing as an artist. So, okay, if you could have an exhibit anywhere locally, let's start here. We'll go global eventually. I know you're getting there. But anywhere locally, where would that be right now? And what would the maybe the theme of the exhibit be?
My idea for, I've had this idea. I want to kind of take the idea of Kips Bay, where every room, I love the idea of showing work in a setting that people can really visualize their own space. You know, I was listening to a recent Artie Girl podcast about the sterile environments of galleries, and there's a time and a place for that. But I like showing my work where people can think, oh, that's what it would look like with a couch there, and the design and curating the entire experience around a piece. So I would, without doing Kips Bay, it's like, can I find a house with a lot of charm and would fit my work, and every room is tailored to that piece.
Sure.
So my Pierce Brosnan James Bond is going to be in this moody, masculine lounge type, maybe a library. But then the next room over is a Jackie, and then you got something with the equestrian, and every room's an experience. It's still around the artwork. As much as I want world-class design, I don't need that competing with the painting. That's, that's still my idea.
The feature is the artwork.
It's still my idea at the end of the day. And I'm trying to sell some paintings and it let people have the experience of my work. So that's that idea. But if I had to choose something, maybe the next collaboration, or if someone was offering me a space, the Flagler Museum, as a history enthusiast, walking in there and feel like I was walking back in time, and someone, a legacy that is renowned up and down Florida, right? So, seeing the name Flagler everywhere is pretty impressive. And to have that, his old home in the museum right under our nose, like, that'd be really cool to take the existing design and put my own spin on maybe the subjects in there that already have portraits, or something, maybe a painting that needs to help tell a story, and putting something contemporary in there and having that juxtaposition.
And just extending the story that's already there.
Yeah, and still do the ornate gold frames and all that, but maybe it's a just a modern version of a painting that would still make sense.
Like
I think it'd be really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And again, and get me out of my comfort zone and push the boundaries and see what I could do with that opportunity.
Yeah. Something like that comes to mind when you see like a really maybe well-known black and white portrait that you've only ever seen in black and white. And then suddenly you see it in color and you get a whole new perspective on the life of that person, the story that, you know, the time that they lived in. I think that'd be a really interesting collaboration. I would love to see that happen. hint, hint, if there's anyone from the Flagler Museum, you know, listening. Okay, so we are going to take a short break and have a word from our sponsors, the Cultural Council for Palm Beach County.
Those dinner reservations and tea times will have to wait, because there's an art-filled paradise beyond these beaches. A mecca of masterpieces. Spectacular sights by day and night. A cultural capital that's calling your name. See so much more than you came for in the Palm Beaches.
We're talking with Dr. Luis Pena, a lung specialist from TGH's Pulmonary Care and Sleep Institute. Doc, I want to talk about COPD. I've heard the term, but I really don't know what it is. So tell me about it.
COPD is a chronic obstruction of a person's airways. Usually it's caused by cigarette smoking, but there are other conditions that can cause it, like environmental exposure to contamination or chronic asthma, sometimes chronic infections or genetic disorders.
How do you know you have it?
People with COPD have a chronic cough, sputum production, or frequent bouts of bronchitis. So that's when you should go to your doctor and we can do pulmonary function testing. We can assess the exact lung function and determine if you truly have or don't have COPD.
Can it be treated?
It can be treated. We use nebulized drugs, inhaled drugs, and lately there are medications that can be injected, like dupilumab, which can be injected once a month. It can decrease the inflammation of people's airways.
All right, that was great, Doc. Thank you so much. And that was your Medical Minute, brought to you by your friends at TGH.
Okay, so we got to get into detail of your style, because you have a really unique take on things. Your work is blending realism with expressionism, abstract elements. How do you decide, you know, you're working on these portraits of very well-known faces. How do you decide how much realism and how much, I'm going to call it, flavor you're going to give something?
I like that word, flavor. It all starts with the eyes. They are the windows to the soul. They are what, as humans, we will look at first. Just naturally drawn to people, right? So whether it's in person or on a canvas, that's where you're gonna look first. So I have to nail the eyes. And this is I don't know if it's called a party trick, but somehow it works. If I get the eyes right, they will follow you around the room. Mm-hmm. So you can make eye contact with a painting, which is the phenomenon of that and the physics or whatever it is pretty cool. So that's how I know it works. But outside of that, and the face in general and making sure it's accurate, and not looking like kind of like Sean Connery, like Sean Connery's brother. It's like, that is Sean Connery. And even with Jack, like I knew I got his face right, but there's still a hint of nervousness. Like, you know, he knows his face better than anybody else. Will he approve? Will he agree? It looks like him. And so that was really, one of the highlights of that meeting was he was complimentary and how I captured his face and the expression, because he's seen hundreds of paintings of himself. So outside of the face, then I can freestyle a bit. My favorite art book that my mom gave me is of the Impressionists, and I don't paint in an impressionistic style for the whole painting, but I like the idea of using that technique. It's the further away you get from the focal point. And so if the hands are at the bottom of the painting, like they don't need to be, you don't need to see the veins. You don't just get the values right, get the light right, and the color to a degree. But if I overpaint and I'm trying to get all the details, you can't see the background. And the background is what makes my style look like mine, because it shows through. So if you see polka dots on a face, it's because they're in the background. If you see pink on the side, like, that would be the lighting if there was a pink light, but maybe it wasn't there. And I need to, especially if it's a black and white, I'm going to colorize it. Or if it's just an older style painting and want to make it look more contemporary, I'll add some color. And so that's where I let that expressionism show through from the background, the little impressionism on the painting as you get further away from the face. And also with, like, if I'm painting an athlete and there's a logo, I don't want that to be a distraction. Mm. Because logos are you know, as crisp as possible.
Yeah.
They're vector images. They're all that.
And they're literally designed to be yeah. eye-catching.
Yeah, exactly. So. And for one, I don't want to step on anybody's toes and make it look like I'm endorsed by whatever the logo is. And that's not the point of the story. Unless the story is, if Nike is a major part of the story I'm telling with the athlete, different, you know, there's a different angle there. I need to show the Nike swoosh.
Right.
But if not, then it could be anything. And I'll make a mention of it so that it's part of maybe the athlete story. Maybe they thought I wouldn't be here without the support of Nike. So I'm trying to balance that without really adding too many details.
Yeah.
And then the hard part is knowing when to stop for people that are used to seeing all the details. Like, how do you choose? And so, I think that just comes with practice.
Yeah.
And also deadlines.
I love that.
I have to stop working.
That's a very true answer.
Has to go. I promised this person by this day and
yeah,
you got to stop.
Yeah, that's true. So when you're capturing these high energy, high intensity moments with a lot of the athletes that you paint, I want to know what your process is like for selecting that one, you know, split second in time, mm-hmm. because of course, if there's, you know, a big win, there's a big moment, but you're narrowing the field down to this like tiny, how are you selecting that?
I love a good sports story. And so I get passionate about whatever it might be. I also want it to be original. So if it's a walk-off home run in a World Series, you might see the same five major famous photographs from mm-hmm. that. It's like, what's the sixth, or what's a different way to tell the same story, but to still stand out from the crowd and make mm-hmm. it my own? I never want to look like I'm copying another artist. I'm not practicing anymore by, you know, maybe imitating Peter Max or something just to figure out the technique. It's like, it needs to be my own.
Yeah.
And that's what my collectors have come to expect. And
what people respond to, because they've, like you said, they've seen the same five things, but the sixth is something special.
And can it be a different angle or can it be a mixture? And so sometimes my solution is that compilation style where there's no way around using a photograph that maybe other artists are using or the world has seen, but adding a second and a third mm-hmm. and telling more of the story. So it is the split second, but it's also like the painting of Coco is a good example of, it is her kissing the trophy. That could have been its own painting, but it's like, okay, how do I push it? Let's put her in the trophy kneeling. She's, you know, overcome with emotion. She collapses and she says a little prayer, but then Billie Jean King as well. And so telling that part of the story. So the painting could be a chapter in a book and not just a paragraph or a page. It can tell more of that. And so that's really it, trying to find my own spin so that it looks like mine and I can tell a story.
Right. All right. So I have a list here to read off of: tennis, hockey, polo, show jumping, soccer, basketball, football, golf, Grand Prix racing. And I'm sure I'm missing things, but this is already a long list of the ever expanding sports portfolio. And is that still expanding?
Yeah. The sports story, the emotion is what drives it all. And so you could tell me that the Michael Jordan of cricket is still playing and playing down the street. And like, okay, tell me more about it. I don't know about that world, but I'm all in.
So we could get a curling painting someday.
Right. Yeah. And as an artist that takes commissions, that could easily come up. And that's an honor for me, especially if it's coming from the athlete or more likely the agent or the spouse or maybe the sponsor, being chosen as the artist to capture that story. But a perfect example is like, I didn't realize, you know, growing up in St. Louis, what was going on in South Florida and the equestrian world, especially the polo world. And I hope if you don't go to polo, and maybe you don't care, but the more you learn about it, the more you'll appreciate the Michael Jordan of polo is playing and he's still dominating. So Adolfo Cambiasso is out there, very accessible on a Sunday to watch the best polo player in the world. And I assume history, I don't want to misspeak here, but like go take the chance to see this athlete. If you're into sports, maybe you won't be your sport. And as you can probably tell, polo's growing on me and I'm getting more excited the more I learn.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's just, there's so many stories out there and the different sports also challenge me to use my technique and maybe techniques that I have. And instead of the splatter paint from being the shaved ice in hockey, it's the dirt in a polo match.
Yeah.
So it works and you got to kind of tap into your tool chest there and maybe use something that you haven't had to use in a while to convey that story.
Yeah. Is there anything that's on the radar, like, you know, coming up that you're expanding into?
Well, it'll be more polo paintings. Mm-hmm. I will have another pop-up out at NPC.
Nice.
With the USPA shop. So I need to do more of that. More scarves on the way. This Hermes idea I'm really excited about right now. And just had a very warm reception to the horses and my version of horses. And kind of harkens back to that, the emotion when I was 10, it's like, this is great. You're getting some applause, like keep doing this. Yeah. Like that's fun. So, no specific commissions for anything like that, but, it is nice to balance the commissions with, you know, whatever passion I have at the moment and, see where that goes.
Very cool. So I want to talk about one of the techniques that you use in your originals, which is this spot varnish that you do, right? So you'll kind of, you know, hide in plain sight words. Maybe it's a name, maybe it's a lyric, a moment, something that you are, you know, like I said, kind of hiding in plain sight that you can see only at certain angles within the light. What is it about this like element of surprise that you kind of like to give your viewer?
Well, yeah, it's more than meets the eye. Mm-hmm. So it makes you engage with the work. And even if you're walking away from the painting and it catches your eye, it's like, oh, come on back. Like give it another 10 seconds, give it 20, 30, learn more about it. It's so easy to dismiss artwork when you don't know what it's saying. And it gives me a way to tell more of the story without overdoing maybe a graphic or something that's really in your face. Like I could put letters in the background, but I don't want. For one, there's another sports artist that's famous for that. Stephen Holland is an inspiration of mine. I discovered him when I was in college. He was showing in Scottsdale. I went to Arizona State. And his paintings were autographed. They were selling for $40,000 20 years ago. Like that was big. That was a lot of money. I'm like, this is cool. It's great work. But there was more graphics to the background. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, well, I don't want to look like I'm copying him. Let's tone that down. But what's a way to still tell the story? So that's that extra layer. And I like that it does cause people to walk back and forth and maybe crouch down, find that angle of light so that they can read what it's saying. It's mostly words. So for Jimmy Buffett, it was a song lyric. My Jason Tatum, it's all about St. Louis pride. So NBA champion Jason Tatum is he's like the golden boy of St. Louis right now. So that painting has a Nelly lyric. So Nelly is also the pride and joy of St. Louis from a hip hop standpoint and a cultural icon in St. Louis. So I was blending all these ideas and really all about St. Louis. And so that's, I'm from the Lou and I'm proud, which is what Jason Tatum is all about. He wears his Cardinals hat for interviews and it's just like, that was a cool piece. So I got to really dive in and make that more than people would assume. If they don't see the arch in the background and all the symbolism. And that's why the work takes an explanation. Unfortunately, and I'm guilty of this. I don't give every artist probably their due process to explain something and appreciate it. It's tough. Like at an art fair, there's only so much time in the day and you get tired too. Right. So, after an hour, 2 hours of looking at artwork, your creative capacity is really shot. So, just want to engage and let people tell me about it.
Yeah. No, vice I love versa. It. So you and I were studio neighbors for a few months, a couple years ago back in West Palm Beach. And I always love to see people come across your work and have those moments and literally and have to jump around and kind of engage with it. It's really enjoyable. And, you know, to see people have those reactions and yes, be called to like, give me another 10 seconds, you know, look a little closer and then notice another detail or, you know, recall a memory of the person they're viewing.
And I call that the party trick. So for the collectors, you don't tell your friends and family and people coming to see it that there's something on this painting.
Yeah.
And that gives them the experience that they can play that forward of having that experience in their house and maybe having a little sense of pride that they have something on their artwork that is more than meets the eye, that might be a conversation starter for their dinner party or something.
Yeah, and you get to have those moments with your guests that they get that reaction and you get the joy of sharing that with them.
Yeah.
Definitely. So you mentioned that you're from St. Louis. You've made South Florida your home. What do you think is unique about the arts and culture sector here that you're really, have been enjoying as a professional artist?
Well, I moved here knowing nothing about the area, and I was so pleasantly surprised to fall into the network that I did early on, blown away by how many working artists are here and how the economics of South Florida support that. So St. Louis is not known for being a huge arts hub in the sense that there are a lot of collectors and there's a lot of walls to fill. Yeah, there are, there's enough, but I wasn't in that circle. I was doing commissions and I didn't have art friends. So moving down here and my first studio being at Grandview through Zero Empty Spaces where we met, was cool to have, immediately art friends and to have foot traffic and to have those experiences outside of a home studio. And then it just blossomed from there. I really have to give a lot of credit to Zero Empty Spaces for creating that environment for us on an affordable level. I jumped around a couple different studios before finding the one I'm in my home now. But the sense of community is so great. Whether it's texting a friend like, "Hey, I'm fairly new here. I need a crate to ship something expensive across the country, who would you use?" So it's referrals like that, but also borrowing easels for a pop-up. so thank you again for that.
Of course, anytime.
It bailed me out. showing work outside can be nerve-wracking. Mm. And so, I was able to tap into my friends for that. I don't need to store 10 easels. I have no place to store 10 easels. Yeah. So just the little things. And then beyond that, because of the style of, I guess, the type of person who might be living in Florida, maybe it's a retiree, disposable income, maybe collecting, maybe it's their second or third house here, they certain level of wealth, they need more art. So there are more art collectors and the real estate boom goes hand in hand. Yeah, so there absolutely are so many walls being built in Palm Beach County and people need art. And I think all of us are just trying to educate, especially the out of towners, like, "Hey, there's great artists here. Mm-hmm. You can buy locally. You can go to the shows. You can ask around. There are great galleries too, but, don't overlook the artist that's trying to make it and doing great work and might take commissions and, have maybe a little more of a personal experience, especially seeing the artists in their studio, as opposed to going to a gallery, maybe buying something that's trendy."
Right.
So all of that in the roughly 4 years I've been here, it's just been, it's amazing. It's a very, I guess, human experience at the end of the day, like especially coming out of COVID, I'm part of that COVID migration to Florida. So at the very end of the day, if it's not even just selling more work, it's just having that, bonding with people in the arts and having opportunities like this to talk about it.
Yeah.
And the thing I did at the Colony last week and talking about it there and just sharing a mutual appreciation for art.
Yeah, there's the resources and there's the community that, connect you and it helps you grow as an artist, helps you connect with other artists and like-minded, people. I love to hear it.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. All right, I want to talk about some of the business side of being an artist, right? You were saying earlier, today's one of the days where this was probably the only thing you're going to paint today,
right?
Because the rest of it is, maybe some meetings and then some of the other side of being a professional artist.
Right.
So what are, if you can give us like the top three things in your business toolkit as a mostly self-represented artist.
Mm-hmm. So I've interpreted, I thought about this. I could go a lot of ways with this. the hard skills, the things that someone could go out and find that I use, beyond the basics of any small business owner, mm-hmm. of being good on email and knowing how to write professionally and proper grammar, like that, you know, we deal with people of all types. And just never know quite who's going to see your email and see your sales pitch or see your work. Beyond that though, at the day to day, early on, I was told about the financial side of it, and you got to know how to manage your money. It's a cash flow business. And so a bookkeeping software, I really can't stress enough. I've used a bunch over the years because every so many years they sell and they are rolled into something else. So for anyone who wants to transition, or it might, however long it takes, it's like, start knowing how to manage your money, and connect your different accounts and start to categorize things, because as a self-employed artist, you're responsible for paying your own tax. I pay quarterly estimated tax based on the income I think I'm going to make. Oh man, that's not a fun day every quarter to be doing that. And it's easy to miss too. Like, mm-hmm. I think 1 or 2 years, I totally forgot. And then at the end of the year, I owed, that you get fined a little bit. And so, whether you do your own taxes or you have somebody help, you got to have your hands around the numbers.
Yeah. It takes the fear out of it. Yeah. I think I see a lot of, you know, not even just younger artists, but people who are wanting to lean more into their art professionally and not knowing when they can do that because they're not aware of their financial capability. And the sooner you start paying attention and tracking and probably using a software, or if you have the ability to hire someone to do that, it's going to make that transition a lot healthier and a lot less fearful.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You got to know that you can keep your lights on.
Right. Cause if you plan incorrectly financially, that could really set you back, and it could mentally, it can be a huge obstacle. And you don't want to have to do anything out of desperation.
Yeah.
You know, we've all been there where we've taken commissions that we maybe didn't want, but we needed the money. And, I think the goal is over time, do less and less of that. So that's the first big one that I see on almost a daily basis. Just the keeping an idea on the finances. But my spreadsheet of everything that I possibly touch is it's like the tab on my, computer that never closes. It's what I'm working on, what the projects are, whether it's just initial pitch or it's an active commission, what's the size, what's the deadline. Deadlines are huge for me. Mm-hmm. With my business background and meeting deadlines and publishing dates and all of that and advertising, it's like, I especially with commissions, like if you don't have a deadline, we're going to put one on it because this is how I work.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people will respond better to having a time constraint, especially to work that may never be finished.
Right.
So having that spreadsheet, because over time, you know, the idea is to have more works than you can possibly count. And remember, you want to know where things go. You want to have an idea of pricing. And so you can increase your pricing over years. So it's all just a way to measure your career annually and then over time. And so that's a good one. I use a Google sheet for that, whether it's Excel, some way to capture it. And then the third is Dropbox or a version of it. What I would tell someone starting off, or what at any point in their career, is like, you got to have visuals of your work. Mm-hmm. It comes up. Mm-hmm. If you're lucky, someone's going to ask to see your work. When I was 26 and first starting to go around town telling people I was an artist, I just quit my job. I was very confident and promoting myself that way. I was so happy to be able to say, I'm an artist.
Yeah.
A lot of people didn't ask to see my work. They didn't believe that I was an artist. Like, that's great. What else do you do? But if you're lucky enough to get to at least past the first step of, right, you're an artist, can I see your work, or what kind do you paint? And so that's a situation you hope to be in. And you have about 5 seconds,
mm-hmm.
10, if you're lucky, 10 feels like a lifetime these days, to get your phone out and to show people what you do. And if you're good at it, you can go straight to an image that maybe you've been talking about or that you want to plant in their mind.
Sure.
So with my Dropbox, or it could be Drive or some other file sharing, some way to pull out your phone, I can go into Dropbox, I go to my portfolio, and I have groups of portraits, equestrian, cityscapes, which I don't do a whole lot of, but it might come up.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on who I'm talking to, I can very quickly go to something and then flip through. So that's a huge, I guess, skill that I've polished over time.
I think that does sound really polished. So much of our portfolios are digital these days anyway. Nobody, you know, you're not carrying around a physical portfolio, but that's a lot more polished than saying opening up a social media account that you kind of have to maybe scroll through a little bit to find the thing that you want to show them,
right,
that organization. Like you said, you know, the attention span isn't long. You have a very short window to get in that elevator pitch, essentially.
It is.
And if you want to show, you want to have your best foot forward, right? You want to have the thing that you want to feature ready to go.
And like 1B of that answer, the Dropbox answer, is the tangible business card. I know there are features of the phones and you can quickly airdrop contacts, mm-hmm, and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you don't get a chance to pull the phone out, if you get 3 seconds, boom, business card, like put a visual on the card. And because I'm crazy about business cards, I always carry 2 different versions. Depending on who I'm talking to. Mm-hmm. You just never know. So I carry a Jackie in case people might know that work, or maybe we're talking about something more feminine or a portrait like that style. But if I have the conversation about something maybe more masculine, maybe sports related, maybe a question related, I keep my jumper as well. And those change every so often.
Yep.
Every 6 months to a year, business cards are, they're not that expensive, but they're worth having something in case you can't pull out the phone, you can't find what you're talking about. You need to leave something on a counter. Like, you can't do that with your phone. It helps to have something tangible. I don't think we're not there yet for sure.
We aren't. And especially with, potentially the demographic that you and I and other professional artists might be dealing with are, later in their years, who aren't necessarily the people who want to tap their phone to your phone to have something saved somewhere in their files. You know, they still want the physical, tangible thing that they can put in their wallet, in their pocket.
And I have people that don't want to even email me. So there is a generation that is not comfortable on email. When I first moved down here, I don't like phone calls. I'm just going to tell it to the world right now. So don't call me.
Don't call me.
Let's plan a call. I'm happy to do that. But my phone's off half the day, and it's not an efficient way to communicate initially. I like email.
I'm on the same page. I like an email because also, there's maybe a little bit of ADHD rumbling around in here, and I need my notes.
Yeah.
I'm a note taker. So I love to have it categorized. Like, I have my email organized. I love an email.
And we're going to get to email eventually.
Absolutely.
Sharing files, sharing comps, submitting a painting for approval before it's delivered, that kind of thing. So we're going to email. Let's just start there. Mm-hmm. But I didn't realize that was a thing for people. And so when they would get my business card, they go, "Where's your phone number?" Like, "Oh, it's..." No one gets that. So eventually I got enough of that. I'm like, "All right, let's see where it goes." I got a second number, got the bat line, and put it on my cards. So now it's there. So that's something that, again, it helps if you just never know who you're talking to, mm-hmm, and you don't want to alienate somebody because you can't meet them where they want to, if you want a collector that only wants to talk on the phone.
Right. At some point, as a self-represented artist, you need to be a certain level of accessible.
Yeah.
And if email isn't it for just that one person, it might, you might need to give out your phone sometimes.
Yeah. So that helps. It is nice to have a card. And
that's a solid 3. That's a good top 3.
3.5.
Yeah. 3.5. That's good. All right. So I ask this question to everybody who comes on here. If you had to pick one event, place, you know, thing related to arts and culture in Palm Beach County that anybody visiting or living here, you really think they should experience, yeah, what would that be?
This is going to sound like a really shameless plug. The History Museum, the Richard and Pat Johnson History Museum, downtown West Palm. And not because my work is there as part of the exhibition, but what they put in there has artwork. It has phenomenal paintings, mm-hmm, the Highwaymen and some others that I'm biased because I love history and I love, like, you have to acknowledge where we've come from to, you know, enjoy what people have done for us and put us in this position, but then how we can pay it forward and for the next generation. And you wouldn't think of a history museum having the artwork and that part of the culture. You might go in thinking, I'm going to see some artifacts and old bones and things like that dug up. And it really is a great cultural experience to see what they're doing there. And it's easily accessible. There's a lot going on in that building.
Downtown West Palm Beach, right?
Downtown West Palm Beach. It's the home of the Historical Society of Palm Beach County. But the sign out front is the Richard and Pat Johnson History Museum.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a great one. And I know from other episodes, the Norton's been mentioned and, mm-hmm, and some of the heavy hitters. And maybe the History Museum has been mentioned, but I just want to make sure that it does get another nod for people to go check it out.
Definitely.
Because the exhibition that's up now is going through June.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. Fantastic. Good. So we have an opportunity to go see it still. I like that. All right. Maybe, you know, we're getting towards the end here. I've enjoyed this conversation. I've learned a lot.
Thank you.
But I always love to leave some people with advice if we can. So maybe if you have one piece of advice for, again, that self-represented artist who's kind of trying to come up and get, you know, find their community, maybe find a niche that they want to lean into, what would you leave them with?
The hardest part as us artists and doing something so personal is talking about it. You have to get good at talking about yourself and your work. It takes the magic out to say, to talk about sales, but if you want to live off your artwork, you have to sell it. Mm-hmm. The only way to sell it is to get someone else emotionally invested in it and you and your progress. So, collectors don't always buy because they love your piece. They want you to keep working and keep doing what you love and what you were put on earth to do. So they're emotionally invested. And so if you're not selling directly to collectors, you have to sell yourself to galleries who will then sell to collectors. Those are two types of people. Someone's either selling for you or you're selling directly. Yeah. You have to get comfortable talking about your work, your inspiration, your pieces themselves. 30-second version, 3-minute version, like, be prepared, because it's just the nature of the business. And that's something that took me a while to figure out. Luckily, as a shy kid growing up, I was thrown into the world of hospitality. My advertising job turned into corporate events and traveling. I had to do a lot of small talk, with high net worth individuals. And I had to start public speaking. I had to get up in front of people and give direction and move hundreds of people from this room to that room. And it's intimidating. And so the only way to get around it is practice. And so if you don't have the opportunities yet, still find a way to practice. Record yourself, have a fake interview, whatever it is. It's such a valuable skill to have. Because anything else can be done. You practice your craft. You're in your studio. You're doing what you love. Social media, some people are good, some people aren't. But you got to get out there and...
Yeah, be able to confidently share your story.
Yeah.
Good one. Yeah. Good advice.
Thank you.
Yeah, it really is. All right, so last question. Where can people connect with you further? You can shout out the website, social media, any events you have coming up.
So the website is kylelux.com. My primary platform is Instagram. So the day in the life, all that stuff, we'll start there. And I just created a broadcast channel for all the invites, all my events coming up. It was a lot to juggle and I was inviting people manually. I'm like, let's take advantage of this tool within Instagram. So now if you sign up to that, you'll get the DM in your your channels section of what's coming up, whether it's ticketed, it might be exclusive, it might not be, but that's the best way to find out. I have, March 13th, I'll be down at the Boca Raton Resort with the Historical Society. They're doing an extension of their In Conversation series, but also the Wish You Were Here exhibition. So it's sports related, which is great for me. So they'll have a panel of athletes, but my work will be there to help just kind of add a little visual stimulation to it. And then I haven't pushed it out yet, but I will have another activation with the USPA shop out of the National Polo Center. That'll be in April.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Great. So we've got some opportunities to connect with you. As always, I appreciate you so much, just, you know, seeing your energy in the community. And I think what you, what you share as an artist is something to aspire to for other artists. So I appreciate how you do your work, share your story. And I always love to see it. I'm always cheering you on. Thanks, in the background, in the side ground. So yeah, thank you for coming on today and talking with me. And I'm just going to say a big thank you to our followers, our listeners, our viewers. We appreciate you for tuning in. Connect with Kyle, find out where, you know, the events that you can see his work. And I hope to see you next time. And one last thing, a big thank you as always to our sponsor, the Cultural Council for Palm Beach County. See you next time. Oh,